Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. Can't complain so far. Knock on wood, it's been a very mild summer. So I'm hoping that that continues because I do not like the 110 degrees despite living in Florida for a piece. But I'm happy with this, you know, high 70s to mid 80s weather that we've been receiving here in the Midwest. So I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, not too bad. Weather-wise, we've been getting too much rain.
Is that your excuse to not hit the golf course?
It is. I will be going out tomorrow. The weather will be nicer. We've had, interesting, in my home area, the two public courses that I play. Well, one of them, the major one that I play at all the time, it's in the process of being sold. So it literally has not opened yet this season, oof, which is crazy. The other public course, it changed hands late last year. Nice thing is the new people are taking good care of it, seeing a lot of improvements there. I'm sure they're getting a lot more business with their competitor down. So anyway, as much as I'm sure our listeners would like to hear about my golf game.
And they do.
Oh, why not? Why not, Dustin? Let's move on. A historic week. We had the House settlement was finally passed, and I thought was fascinating. I believe it was an athletic director. I can't remember which school. He called this one of the three most impactful events in college sports history, along with the formation of the NCAA about 120 years ago. Title IX implemented in the early 70s, and now the House settlement. Is that hyperbole, Dustin?
No, probably not, because it's going to, I don't know if it's going to change the way college sports are going, but I think it's going to impact athletic departments in college sports in a way that's both beneficial and negative. In the sense that you're going to start seeing student athletes essentially become employees of their school and they're going to get compensated. I think this also is going to provide some sense of rules, some sense of guardrails in terms of payment and what's permissible, what's not permissible. Now, whether or not people are going to go back to what's impermissible at some level, probably so. I'm sure we'll see that in some regard. But then the other aspect of this, too, is I've already talked with some people that I know, and it's going to be job hunting season because they're in athletic departments and they work for Olympic sports programs or whatever the case might be, and there's just not going to be enough funds to go around. So I think there are some positive aspects to this. There are certainly more negative aspects to this. So it's still, I think you can't paint it with a black or white brush. I think there's a lot of gray area. I think there's a lot of nuance involved in this. And there's probably going to be different variations of things we see down the line. I think it's a step, and it gives you the NCAA or these conferences or these schools at least some sort of direction. They know where they can go. They can kind of start planning ahead. At the same time, I think there's going to be other issues that are probably going to pop up at some point.
The infamous unintended consequences, Dustin.
Yeah.
I think we're going to hit a lot of those. Let's go through some of these aspects. And you said there'll be some pluses and minuses. I think there'll be pluses and minuses to the same aspect of it. You know, simply compensating players. There'll be those who will say it's the best thing going. There'll be others who say that's the worst thing in the world. It takes away what college sports was always supposed to be. Which side of the ledger you fall under?
Yeah, I think if you ask me that question. Again, it's a nuanced answer. I think overall, this is going to sound old man yelling at clouds. I think I'm kind of still against it, and I'm not against kids making money. But there, to me, like what made it college sports so great was the amateurism aspect. And I'm not naive to think that nobody was ever getting paid or nobody was ever, you know, getting the benefit of being a premier college student athlete. But I don't know. I think this is just probably some nostalgia. What I always wanted to see was, okay, if I'm a high profile athlete, nice make, you know, if my jersey sells $50,000, and I'm just throwing out easy numbers because I'm bad at math, Jim, I want to see that student athlete get, you know, a percentage of that. I want to see that student athlete be able to go out to a 2-hour autograph session and make a couple $100,000 or $1,000. I'm not against kids making money. I just feel like the way that this all kind of snowballed, and I've said this for years and years, if the NCAA would have just kept up with the times and altered its rule book, you know, the ultimate example was, you know, they can get donated, people can donate bagels, but they can't donate the cream cheese or the jams. And I think that was a little bit taken out of context. At the same time, it's just like if the NCAA would have kept up with the times, we wouldn't have this snowball where everything's changing in a 5-year period. So I don't know. I'm not against student athletes getting paid. I don't think it's necessarily the worst thing in the world. But again, I think we talked about this a few weeks ago. The nostalgia factor makes me want to enjoy the amateurism. And now that aspect of college sports is completely gone.
Well, my take, Dustin, I understand the nostalgia, you know what I mean. The aspect of, like, when we were young and we saw the sports, the innocence to it. But there was a big difference then. It wasn't necessary, at least it didn't start out as big money sports. You know, yeah. Like what we see today in high school sports where, you know what, they end up costing the school district more money than they bring in. But it's a benefit for the student athletes. And that's what was going on in college. But interest was so great that, hey, it became a moneymaker. And in many places, the money-making football carry the weight for the rest of the sports, which were not revenue sports. So you have now, though, it's a $1 billion industry.
Yeah.
And when the question about compensating the players versus the conference commissioners, the coaches are making an obscene amount of money. The staff, the administrators, the ADs, the conference people, the bowl game people, they were all making money. Everybody was making money, Dustin, except the people who were creating the revenue stream, the actual players. So because of that, I call that part, the compensation of the players, a good thing. If there's billions of dollars coming in, can't we at least give some of it to the people who are generating that revenue?
I agree. And I think part of this too, what gets lost in this mix too, is that, and I think what should have happened is there should have been, whether it was a cost of living increase or whether it was based on a percentage based on where you live. I think these student athletes, first of all, they got free education. I know people hate that argument, but I am still paying off some of my college debts, Jim. And I would love to have started out college without that. So I want to throw that out there because I know people hate that argument, but it's still something that I think is forgotten for a lot of these schools. That's probably at least $100,000 of free money that they're receiving. They also receive stipends, and that wasn't a ton of money. But again, if the NCAA could have, hey, you know what? We know cost of living has gone up. Apartments aren't the same as they used to. Groceries aren't the same as they used to. Maybe you get a higher percentage if you live in California as opposed to if you live in Champaign, Illinois, because it's going to be, you know, you're probably going to be paying less in rent and things like that. If they would have just kept up with the times, I think it's a little bit different. And I think part of the reason why I'm not like morally opposed to student athletes getting a chunk of change is not only because they bring it, they're the reason they bring in a lot of money. There's also, you talk about the times of change. There used to be more strict rules about when you could practice, when you could compete. Now, just the, like, I just got done at a Purdue basketball practice and it's June 9th. This is their first practice. Now, they're still limited on the number of hours they can practice per week, how much time they can spend with coaches. But you think they're not in the gym constantly? You think they're not in the weight room and watching their nutrition and getting their runs in and their conditioning done? It's now become 24/7, 365, basically, for whatever sport you're in. And that used to not be the case. So now there is no other opportunity to get another, you know, an outside job. And not that these kids ever really had another job, but there isn't really those other opportunities to make money. And there's not really an opportunity to get away from your sport. So I again, from that aspect, I think it's a good thing because it gives them, you know, they are the ones that are bringing in the money. So they deserve a chunk of it. But there were also avenues in which they were earning money in previous ways that I don't ever think gets discussed.
Well, there is the great value of the scholarships that does get forgotten a lot. And I'll give you an example. The revenue share going to student athletes, they are using a percentage, which I believe is 22%. And very quickly, someone said, well, that's still unfair. Look at professional sports where the players get approximately 50% of the revenue. Well, that 22%, that's direct payment. It doesn't account for scholarship and housing, education, all of those things, Dustin. What it also doesn't take into consideration is the colleges are supporting non-revenue sports. So if you want to talk about this in a truly total capitalistic way, you keep football, you keep men's basketball. Why? Because they generate revenue. All the other sports, if you're going to use the business analogy, Dustin, you get rid of them. You scrap that department that loses money for you. Okay. And, you know, we're running up against the break, but that's one of the arguments that upsets me when they talk about not being fair with the dispensing of money to those other sports. Well, those sports already are costing money to put out there and their scholarships. We'll talk about that more, and I'll actually let you respond, Dustin, when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim. He's Dustin. We're talking about this college sports house settlement. By the way, I don't know if we ever talked about this. Do you know who House is?
I do know. Grant House, the swimmer.
Yes, very good. Most people don't. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, did he go? I don't remember where he went. Was he a Stanford swimmer? I don't remember the school.
Arizona State.
Arizona State, okay.
And to understand this, most people, when they think about this House settlement, they think mostly about football, some about basketball. That's where the compensation is going to go. But the reason for this Grant House, why he had the issue, is he was potentially, maybe, I don't know if he was an Olympic participant or not, but he was going down that path, a very good swimmer. But as opposed to Olympic athletes from other countries, he could not get compensated at all to help him out with his training and all of that. He could get no NIL money, essentially, where every other country, those athletes can. Now, their formats were different. There wasn't, you know, collegiate swimming in Yugoslavia. So here in the U.S., if he would follow this path as a collegiate swimmer, he couldn't get the money and compete in that way with other countries. So that's how that came about. Fascinating to me that it's a Olympic sport athlete, not a, you know, football player. But anyway, getting back to, you know, our discussion, you brought it up about the compensation, getting a scholarship for their studies, Dustin, and the value of it. I think that gets lost in this shuffle also, because that's part of what the universities and the alumni are footing the bill for.
Yeah. What's interesting, I'm going to go back to Grant House, is I wonder if he knew when he filed this, it would probably be the death of his sport for a lot of schools. And I'm not even, like, that's not hyperbole. A lot of schools are going to get rid of their swimming programs because it does, as you mentioned, it does nothing. I know this is a conversation at a lot of schools where they're going to get rid of these sports. Like, that is going to happen. And that's, to me, a downside. And we can talk about, if you want to just look at it straight, black and white, the business aspect, yeah, you have to scrap those sports because they're not bringing in anything. And eventually the cost is going to outweigh the income. So you're going to scrap those. I hate that we've gotten to that point, because I'm against people not getting opportunities that would probably otherwise not get opportunities for a further education or athletic experience. So that's, to me, that's one thing where, I don't know, if in 10 years, if half of the swimming programs are done, was it worth it? And I think the other thing that bothers me more than athletes getting paid in the future is the back pay. It really bothers me when you have people from previous years who are going to get back compensation at the time you knew what you signed up for. And maybe it sucks, but that's the way of the world. Like, sometimes you have to learn a tough lesson. And so for guys like in previous years, like Denard Robinson, to file these suits, like, there's a lot of people that have filed suits about their inability to, like, go get a job, man, learn LinkedIn. We all have to do. It's what most of us have to do. Like, I agree, it sucks, but it to me, that's one of the things that bothers me more than anything, because you're talking about is it in the billions? Is it 20 some billion that they're going to have to in back pay? And that's just going to cripple some of these athletic departments. Like, I've said this before, if I'm like, I'm just going to use an example, like Ball State, why would I have sports? You can't keep up. You're not going to have that much money in donors, in donorship and athletic. The MAC's not breaking in a ton of money. Like, why would you even offer sports at this point? That's my legitimate question, and I don't have the answer to it.
And in playing a little bit of devil's advocate, and being the hard-nosed capitalist, okay, fine. Does that university owe that swimmer anything? You don't owe him compensation. If anything, it's the other way, because the university is paying him, you know, giving him a scholarship, right, already, and he's not producing the revenue. It's just like, Dustin, you as an employee, if you have your own department in a company I'm running, and your department is costing me money, I lose money on you every month, guess what? You're gone. And no one's going to feel sorry for you, Dustin, because you don't bring anything to the table. And I think this is an argument that everyone always will argue from their own benefit point of view. And the real world, it struck me, Dustin, when a year or two ago, was it Dartmouth, where the basketball players wanted to unionize?
Yeah, I think so.
It was definitely an Ivy League school. And I'm just thinking, if I'm one of the Ivy League presidents, I'd say, you know what? Our school is an Ivy League school. It does not change one iota whether I have a basketball program or not. and you guys are costing us money. Fine. Gone. If I were the Ivy League, I would just get rid of sports. Do you think people will not want to go to Harvard anymore because they don't have sports, Dustin?
No, I don't think that's going to be the case. And I think there's probably a lot of schools that it's not going to hurt if they were to cut athletic programs or their entire athletic department. But so then at what point, in my opinion, I loved watching teams that were lower. Like if it's just Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Alabama, Clemson, if we get to that point where there's 40 schools competing, I can promise you I'm not going to watch it. It doesn't interest me. The beauty of college sports, yes, you always get the same teams, but you would always have that potential underdog story. Imagine you don't get Northern Illinois upsetting Notre Dame. You don't get Appalachian State upsetting Michigan. Those are few and far between. Imagine you don't get Fairleigh Dickinson upsetting Purdue or UMBC upsetting Virginia in the NCAA tournament. Although they're few and far between, those are the actual reasons why we love college sports. I don't care what anybody says. If you're an Ohio State fan, yes, you love winning national championships. But the reason you continue to watch every single Saturday is the chance of upsets, is the chance to see David beat Goliath. And anything unlike in any other league, there are no upsets in the NBA. They're all professional basketball players. There are no upsets in the NFL. Just my opinion. That's what makes college sports different. So if you have 40 schools, 50 schools, whatever the number is, that are the best of the best, why would I watch that and just not watch the NFL?
There is, however, upsets in Major League Baseball. The Colorado Rockies win a game.
That's, you know what? That's a fair point.
But you're exactly right. And let's go into a little bit more of the details of the House settlement and what's going to come of it. We hit on some of it. Yes, there's some of the back pay going to some former players. It is fine. That has zero effect really on the product we're going to see on the field today. Money is going, it's going to be approximately up to like $20, $21 million that each university could compensate their student athletes. I make sure I emphasize up to, because the schools could choose how much of that money they want to distribute. At least for now, they have the ability to decide how that money is going to be distributed. The vast majority will go to football. Next up will be men's basketball, and then the rest of the sports will get what little is left over, Dustin. Various schools could decide themselves how they want to distribute that money. Is that going to hold up, Dustin? You know we're going to get a Title IX legal battle.
Oh, for sure you're going to. And this is one that I don't know how that's going to work. I've said to, like, at some point, like, the schools are going to have to keep a lot of women's sports because of the football. Now, I don't know when you have employees. I don't know how this Title IX is going to work when you eliminate scholarship limits. I don't know how that's going to work. But I would assume – go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is that's the other thing they took away was scholarship limits and replaced it with roster limits.
Right.
Which are essentially the simple example is in football, 85 scholarships, but essentially as many players as you want, including right. walk-ons. Now they're saying we're going to limit you to 105 players, but you could give scholarships to all of them.
Yeah. So I would assume that you have to have, if you're going to do 105 in football, you're going to have 105 across women's sports. So, like, I think that there's going to be more women's sports I think some women's sports are going to be safer than a lot of men's sports in the ultimate in terms of the cutting of sports. I don't know, but there is going to be a legal battle. I don't know how they're going to disperse it. I don't know how any of that's going to work. That's the stuff there, Jim, that's over my head.
Well, I think, Dustin, and this is just me theorizing, the wording of the agreement is the sharing of revenue. And if you look at it that way, football brings in the revenue. Men's yeah. basketball brings in the revenue. So where should that revenue be shared? So I think that will be the argument that we're not against women's sports. If women's softball brought in as much money as men's football, they would get that share of the revenue, but they don't. And each individual school will have the freedom. So I don't know the answer to this. Oklahoma is the best women's softball program in the country, right?
Yep.
Obviously, they could divert more dollars there. But does Oklahoma softball make money? Is it a revenue sport for them?
I would think so. I think there's a few, like another, if you want to keep it in the Big Ten, I think Nebraska volleyball would be another one that's a really good example that probably does bring in money. I don't know this. I don't know, but like Florida softball and baseball, those are two, you know, generally those two programs lose money at specific schools, but at Florida, I know that those are big, big, big. I don't know whether they break even, make money, but those are two examples that I feel like if you're going to keep other sports around, those are the, if you're in a, if you have an elite sport, it, I don't know how much it costs to keep a volleyball. It's probably more expensive to keep a softball or baseball team around, but I don't know. I don't know. It's, that's going to be an interesting thing to keep an eye on.
We will continue this right after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about the state of college athletics in the wake of the House settlement. Dustin, I think here's the thing that bothers me, and maybe this is me being a capitalist, but I get upset when I see, well, I'll just use the example, players in the WNBA, which, by the way, is subsidized by the NBA, or it wouldn't exist. Their players are complaining they don't make as nearly as much money as players in the NBA. Well, you don't generate the revenue. That's the problem. And I think the best example of this and why they should all, you know, just thank the good Lord that Caitlin Clark exists, because she's bringing in revenue for all of them. And the best example of this is recently she's out injured, Dustin. And I think it was with playing Chicago. The Chicago team, they moved their game to the large arena to accommodate playing Indiana with Caitlin Clark. She's out hurt. So what did those tickets cost once it was found out Caitlin Clark wouldn't be there?
50 cents. You yeah. could get in for 50 cents.
Yes. So there's your answer to this question. You know what? If you're not bringing in revenue, you can't complain about your compensation, because we may not like losing some of those sports that are non-revenue sports, Dustin, but can you blame the schools for saying, you know what, we're now having to come up with an extra $20 million, and maybe if you're Ohio State and Penn State, not a big deal. They could still support those non-revenue sports, but there's going to be other schools, they just can't afford to do it. Dustin, can you blame them for cutting those sports?
I don't think you can, but I think that there's also I would be asking the question for some of these sports, and some of it it's not going to matter, and some of it it might, and I'm going to explain. by saying sometimes people don't know what they're missing until it's made available. Volleyball was not a very big sport across the country. And now the Big Ten is kind of at the forefront of broadcasting, Big Ten Network, excuse me, of broadcasting several volleyball matches throughout the course of the season. It was one of the fastest rising sports in network history. Year after year, they're setting viewership records. They're setting attendance records. What the Big Ten Network did was they made that available to the consumer. And all of a sudden, I'm not saying it's now a revenue generating sport. I'm sure for some schools it is, and other schools it's probably not, just like any other sport. But when it becomes available and you're doing that on a wider scale, you can start to make money. You can start to see advertising dollars. There's now two professional leagues in the United States alone, and then there's a plethora of international leagues. So how do you know what the demand is for other sports if you're not willing to broadcast it? Because nobody knew that there was a demand for volleyball until you started broadcasting it. Nobody knew there was a demand for women's basketball until they started broadcasting it. So that's where I would say, well, yeah, we're not making any money, but you don't give us the platform. You don't give us the same opportunities. Now, I understand that advertisers and networks set that, and they have ways to gauge what people are interested in. And maybe wrestling's not the best sport or most profitable sport or most interesting sport, or maybe it's swimming or track and field. But did you give it a fair chance? Because we see when you broadcast things and you allow people to consume it and say, hey, man, these are actually high level athletes. I love sitting down and watching women's volleyball or men's baseball or swimming and diving or whatever the case might be. That would be, if I'm a student athlete, if I'm a school athletic director, whatever, and I have to cut sports, that would be my complaint. Is like, well, did you see what happened when we started airing more baseball games, softball games, volleyball games, women's basketball games? Did you see the numbers rise? Do you see that it is now a more marketable product? And we may not ever find that out because the television partners and people that be just don't give it a proper opportunity.
Would it be wrong for me to say, Dustin, gee, how about a beach volleyball version of women's volleyball? Anyway, all right, let's just forget that. Okay. Your point is valid, but the people who televise these events, these sports, to try to make money on it, they're making financial decisions that make sense to them, meaning will this product, if I put it out there, make money? And I'll relate two sports very similar. Little League Baseball has become huge. We started to see, well, it started with just the championship game, then the semifinals, then the whole World Series. We now get the regionals televised to it. And they get good ratings for it. Why? It's entertaining. It's a fun watch. Guess what? Women's softball, collegiate softball, same thing. Dustin, I am like, I don't want to say addicted to the sport, but I really enjoy it. It's baseball, but it's fast. It's quick. The skill level is really impressive. But more important than the skill level, it's just entertaining. Dustin, it really is. It's phenomenal. So that's probably it's getting more television revenue. It's getting more attendance. It's showing the potential to make money and not be a loser as far as, you know, revenue dollars. So I don't think those things will go away. But golf at the collegiate level, how much revenue do you think that brings in?
Yeah, not a lot. I'm not disagreeing with you there, but they do air it on Golf Network. I do know that. Or Golf Channel. Sorry, not Golf Network, Golf Channel. I do know that.
But if that's enough revenue to support it, golf won't be going anywhere, Dustin. So I don't think that when we've reached the point, as you pointed out, it was a swimmer who ironically is the house settlement is named after him. But his very sport might go away, And as you pointed out, be careful what you wish for. Now, do I feel terrible for swimmers? Not necessarily. Around the world, Dustin, these other countries, their athletics survives without collegiate sports. So we really don't owe those swimmers anything. I say we, you know, as alumni of, you know, Penn State, you know, if we alumni say we just can't live without swimming at our school, we could do something about it. We could put money towards that program. But if no one's willing to put the money towards the program, I guess I don't really have a problem with those sports going away. Let me change a topic. Same with the House settlement. Some of the other things, Dustin, the one I really am curious to see how this pans out, NIL is still going to exist. The collectives are still going to exist. Players are going to be able to be compensated over and above that money that will come directly for the university. But here's where things change. They're saying anything, any compensation over $600 for NIL is going to be looked at, not by the NCAA, but an independent group that was hired to monitor those and make sure it's not a case of, you talked earlier in the program about going to a car dealership, signing autographs, making a couple hundred dollars, maybe a thousand. You can no longer slip $500,000 to a player for showing up at a car dealership and signing autographs for 2 hours. How's that going to work?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of lawsuits filed in that regard. The other thing that's interesting to me, and I don't know how this is going to work. Again, I plead ignorance because I graduated college, but I don't know how. So I plead ignorance on a lot of this stuff. The other interesting way to go about this is, I don't know if it's a lot of companies or if it's, but wouldn't there be a workaround? Now, you could probably find this as fraudulent, but I'm just throwing this out there. Wouldn't there be a workaround to say, well, we're John Doe car dealership, and we're going to pay Drew Aller $500 through this NIL. We've got another NIL set up. We're going to pay him $400 this way. Now, I don't know if it's just – I don't know how that would work. Could you have a bunch of different NILs that don't reach $600 that hit a certain total? Now, I don't know. If it comes from one company, I would think there would be some sort of flag for that because you're making more than $600 from one company. So, well, but I don't know.
I think, Dustin, some of this has to be – self-policed a little bit. I believe for the first time
you're asking the NCAA and its member institutions to self-police? Okay, well, I'll let you continue now.
I think there's a bit of the we're seeing this now with the college football playoffs. You know, the conference commissioners are getting together. I think they're also looking at it like, do the Big Ten and Southeast Conference say, we're in an arms race here and there's no end in sight. Mm-hmm. You know, all of it's a mutual destruction kind of deal where no one's going to be able to keep up. And if Penn State's got that loophole to compensate Drew Aller, you're going to see Clemson do the same thing with Cade Klubnik and Texas with Arch Manning and on and on and on. So I think they mutually have gotten to the point where they're saying, you know, we've got to find an end to this. And so I think they're for it. And I do believe you're going to get, you know, the old, they call them the $1,000 handshakes, you know, where cash was and I'm sure we're going to still have people cheating and doing it, but it's like the money is so large now. If Drew Aller, you know, you're trying to do a workaround, how many of those $500 payments is he going to need to get to the compensation that he's getting overall? We just saw Penn State's backup quarterback, Bo Prabula, transfer to Missouri for $1.5 million, Dustin. that's going to take a heck of a lot of $500 payments to match. We'll talk about it more when we come back after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. And Dustin, we were talking about when we took the break, the NIL compensation is still going to exist, but the college sports has put into place a group that is going to police this and be essentially a clearinghouse for any deal over $600. You mentioned, could there be a loophole where we just do multiple agreements each for $500? And I think that will get exposed, but it reminds me a little bit about, for years, professional sports, gambling was the real, you know, no-no. Yeah. Couldn't do it. But, you know, 75 years ago when players were making $20,000 a year, it didn't take much money to matter. Now, professional athletes are making $10, $20, $30, $40 million a year. How much are you going to have to pay them to bribe them to throw a game?
Yeah.
And it's a little bit the same way. So you were using Drew Aller as an example. I countered with the fact that Bo Prabula, a backup quarterback at Penn State, was drawn to Missouri, transferred to Missouri, and he's going to get $1.5 million. Now, I'm not saying that to – I would do the same thing if I were Bo Prabula. I don't blame the kid at all. But that's the kind of money we're now talking about, Dustin. So I'm wondering if there's a little bit of, gee, is it worth me cheating for thousands of dollars when I'm making tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Yeah, probably. I mean, probably not. But I still, I think on some level, you're probably going to get, if there's a loophole, somebody's going to figure it out. Now, I don't know how that's going to work. I do think there's probably going to be some money that exchanges hands. It's almost like you're taking a step back while also taking a step forward. I don't know. Maybe Michael Jackson did it in a dance sometime. He was really good at doing stuff like that. But it's like you're going – now that you have guardrails out and you have these rules in place where you can kind of check and say, hey – you know what? Was that commercial you did for 30 seconds really worth $450,000 in small town Michigan or whatever the case might be? So at the same time, though, you're going to probably bring back some of that under the table money. There's going to be as, and maybe we're not talking about the players making $1.5 million. Maybe we're talking about the guys making $20,000 who. Maybe I'm a five-star freshman and I just don't have a spot on this Ohio State roster this year, but maybe when Jeremiah Smith leaves, I'm going to have a spot and people in Columbus want to keep me happy. So they can't pay me. I understand that Ohio State has a lot of money, so I'm just using this as an example. But so maybe I can't make $1.5 million now because somebody didn't want to put that investment without the proof, but they want to see what I can do. So they're going to pay me $35,000 and it's going to be under the table money. So it doesn't have to go through a clearinghouse. I don't know that that's going to happen. But I think we can't give too much credit to people being self-policed when you still have things happening, particularly in the SEC, but, but well, still happening in college sports.
I believe it will happen. There's always going to be cheaters, Dustin. Mm-hmm. That's the way of the world. But where I'm going to be more intrigued with is how this is handled legally. And I think there's a couple – I think saying that, you know, the car dealership who wants to offer me $300,000 to show up for one afternoon, the clearinghouse will obviously say, hey, wait a minute, you know, at a local car dealership at State College makes no sense. And we're going to nix that. But that's going to end up in court. And the argument,
yes, it will.
If they want to compensate me that, who are you to restrict my ability to make money? I think.
And sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you can also, if I'm the dealership, I can justify that and saying, well, we're not just going to use this for this year. If we're going to use this commercial for 10 years. And if we make $300,000, we get our money back. If we make anything, like, to me, I don't know how you gauge what a company values in terms of its advertisement.
Well, I think there are ballpark standards of, you know, a local State College dealership, what they would compensate a spokesman versus what Nissan will compensate Arch Manning for going to the Heisman House, you know, with a national broadcast. It's pretty obvious there's a huge difference in dollars for those things. And Arch Manning has the benefit of his family name. He's a national figure, a national name. So be it. He will make a lot more money than someone with, you know, state advertising at Ann Arbor Nissan, you know, locally. Right. So there should be that differentiation. However, does that still pass the, you know, laws that say you're restricting my ability to make money? And how will that hold up in court? And there can be the other part to this is individual states can make their own laws and have been, and they've been doing it to benefit their own players. Will the federal government, will Congress step in here, Dustin, and make federal law that the states can't override?
Probably. And if you want to know my honest opinion of it, it's because they don't want to address any real issues that are happening in the world. So they're just going to kick this can down the road. They're just going to address this and try to appease student athletes. But yeah, I think that that's probably eventually where that's going to happen, because you're going to have already, and I think this is the example you're using, there are at least, I think Georgia's one. I don't know what the other ones are, because the ones I'm thinking off the top of my head already don't have state income tax, but they are attempting to exempt their student athletes and their NIL earnings from state taxes. I just tell you, if I was in one of those states, I'd be pissed, Jim.
and that's what those state legislatures are going to have to live with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some of this stuff, maybe self-policing isn't the right word, but I think certain equilibrium will be reached when, you know, people get upset when there's an unfair law like that put into place. You know, the athletes don't get taxed. Well, wait a minute, that's wrong. I think another thing going on, and this is partly in talking to people at Penn State, which is where, you know, I'm closest. You mentioned the attractiveness of going to a state that doesn't have state taxes, you know, like mm-hmm. Florida. Well, what I think some players are beginning to learn, just like we in the real world have learned, if you take a job or a athletic scholarship to a place that doesn't provide you everything else, using football, are you preparing me to play on Sundays? You know, are you going to treat me well for the next 4 or 5 years, even if I rip up my knee and I'm not going to be as valuable to you anymore? By the way, I might end up in the NFL for 3 or 4 years. I still have, you know, 50, 60 years of my life remaining. What am I going to do then? I think some of the student athletes are beginning to figure out there's more to this than just going to the highest bidder.
And I think at some point, now we've seen this with multiple professional sports, and I don't know how much this has changed. And I'm not saying that just rant willy-nilly. I just don't have the stats or the numbers for it. How many NFL players, NBA players have you heard about that made a ton of money during their career and then have gone broke?
Yeah.
And I think to what you're speaking to, it's okay, I can go to the highest bidder for now, but if I blow all my money, then I'm at square one when I graduate, and maybe I'm not good enough to go to the NFL, or maybe I get signed to a, you know, what are they, two-way contracts or whatever. Yeah. And I don't have a future. I've got to be prepared for something else. And so my hope is that this eventually doesn't just become about money. There's enough lessons, and this is going to sound harsh, but you're going to have enough lessons learned the hard way. Nico Imoliva, however you pronounce his last name, that what's valued is not just simply the dollar sign and the amount. It's, as you said, are you preparing me for the NFL? If it's not going to be the NFL for me, are you preparing me for my post-college career? Are you going to take care of me? Is that, here's the other thing too, that we probably don't have time to talk about today, but as you mentioned, in the old days, a lot of times players would get compensated or stay on scholarship, even if they suffered an injury. You know what? We're going to honor your scholarship. When you're talking about this level of money and you have to win, sorry, you're not on a 105-man roster.
Yes.
That could be 100% what it is. And you might have been a five-star kid and you made $100,000 your first year, but you tore up your knee and you're no longer any good to us. And we have these roster limits. We don't have a spot for you. I'm sorry. That's the world we live in. This sucks. I think there's going to be aspects of that too.
And what I don't know, I know that within this PAL settlement, there is some medical insurance concessions that the schools have also made in protecting players after their collegiate career if they're injured. But it leads also to another aspect to this, Dustin, and are these athletes employees? The holy grail to all this is probably going to be collective bargaining. So that, and until we get there, it's going to be in a constant state of flux. And again, it's a topic for another week because there's so much to it. But this is a next step, I believe, in getting us to that collective bargaining, Dustin.
Yeah, I think so, because we've talked about already contracts, you know, what's fair, what's not fair. I think that this is the gradual process. And I do think that probably in the grand scheme, this was probably good that it got settled because it can take you to the next step. And once you get it uniformed, at some point, this is all going to be, I don't know the streamline's the best word, but this is all going to be a little bit more clear. As you mentioned, there's going to be outliers. We're always going to have cheaters. Things are always going to pop up that we maybe don't know about. But I think if you can at least put up some guardrails and you have some sense of direction, then at least I'm going to say level playing field because it's the best kind of wording I have. It'll put everybody on a level playing field and we'll be kind of back to where we were when it was amateurism. It'll be at least something that we know we're getting into. You can get towards contracts. You can get towards collective bargaining. Players know what they're getting into. Coaches know what they're getting into. And everybody knows what the rules and situations are.
We'll keep our fingers crossed for that. That's the last word. Thank you, Dustin. Thank all of you for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.